Welcome to the Pulpit and Pew Podcast. My name is Matt Higginbotham. I am the pastor at First Baptist Church Rockdale, the pulpit section of the Pulpit and Pew. And with me, as always, is my dear friend Zach Rowland.
Hello, good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to see you, Zach. It's been a minute or two. This is, I think we had 2 weeks off. Vacation Bible School happened, and this room that we record in was just jam-packed with other stuff that was on the stage.
Yep.
So we're back at it today. So I guess there's a lot that's probably gone on in the last couple of weeks. But any highlights for you, Zach? Anything last couple of weeks? By the way, it was total terror in your eyes when I asked you that. You're like, oh my goodness, 2 weeks.
No.
Yeah, what you got?
It feels like more than 2 weeks. Like I was thinking it was like three. It felt like it. No, I mean, nothing crazy. Last weekend, we went to Austin. I got a hotel room for me and the wife to just really just relax, and we just like hung out in the hotel room, went and walked around some and ate at little sandwich shops and stuff. And it was really just I had promised her a big like 30th birthday trip, but she's 5 months pregnant.
She does not
want that. So flying and doing all that was probably not in the cards. So I just took her on a getaway. Had the folks watch the kids. Then that was fun. Then just came back.
All right. Good time. Yeah.
And, man, I can't think of anything else that happened over the last 2 weeks. What about you?
Well, we had Vacation Bible School. That was a big to-do. We had the kids put on a play. Well done. Really an exceptional thing. We recorded it, so if you want it, I'm sure it violates all sorts of copyright laws for us to post it publicly on YouTube or something, but we have a recording of it that we can probably share in-house, so we'll try to get that out to the parents whose kids were involved. I saw like Ruth walking around with her little fish thing.
We felt like horrible parents because we didn't know she was going to be in that. Like
superstar.
Yeah. And then there she was. At least we got good video of it, but... Yeah,
imagine that video will be better because it'll be focused directly on Ruth, whereas my video that I was doing was kind of the whole. So you make Ruth's one of the fish up there.
That'd both be cool. I'd like to have the other one too.
It was a good time. So that was a big to do. Took a lot of time and effort. Such thanks to my wife and Kristen Klein specifically, who put on a ton of work, but also just a lot of volunteers came up to make Vacation Bible School work. So that was a big deal. Feed Rockdale's continuing. We're past the halfway point of Feed Rockdale now. So we're in our third to last week delivering right now.
829 bags of popcorn last night.
It's true. That was an impressive amount of popcorn that our Sunday school class put together. So, that was all of the popcorn in that 50-pound bag plus whatever we had. Did he empty that whole?
Yeah, that was a whole bag.
All right, I'm going to need to buy another 50-pound bag of popcorn is what I was.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You get kind of hypnotized by the time you get to like bag 450, you're just
It's thoughtless.
You're just slinging it, yeah.
Yeah. But it's good. Feed Rockdale is going well. Made some good contacts with some families, so that's good. Today is my 24th wedding anniversary. Congratulations, yeah. 24 years ago today, I was married to Danielle.
Your oldest kid is 22?
He'll be 22. No, he'll be 23 in November.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, we were married 9 months. We got pregnant and had him 9 months later. So it was 18 months married. I like to make it real clear so no one does like the backwards math.
Yeah, we got married in December of 2018, and we had Ruth in June of 2020. So
yeah, y'all pretty are normal, legitimate there. Yeah,
pretty normal span.
Yeah, so we did that. Danielle isn't here. She's in New York with my daughter on their 16th. One of my daughters on her 16th birthday trip. So,
what all are they going to do up there? Like, do they have an itinerary, or do they just go?
So they have things like they bought a couple of tickets to a couple of Broadway shows. So that's happening. I don't think tonight, but tomorrow night, Wednesday night, probably there'll be some Broadway shows. They have today. I know they went to like the World Trade Center stuff, 9/11 stuff, Memorial Museum stuff. And the Statue of Liberty, so they did some of that stuff today, plus shopping.
I don't think I'd do the 9/11.
No?
No. I don't know. Just doesn't seem like fun to me.
Have you ever been to a Holocaust museum, Zach?
No.
Okay. They're not fun.
Wouldn't do that either.
Just so you know, it's not like a, wouldn't man, I had a blast either. At the Holocaust museum, but like it's.
Go to New York. Go to New York to see the Big Apple. Have fun. Okay, maybe it's an unpopular opinion.
We're similarly aged. I'm 43. How old are you, Zach?
I'm 37.
37. So we're not that similar age. So when you when 9/11 happened for you, you were like in junior high.
We're closer in age than me and my wife.
Correct. But you were in junior high when that happened then, right?
I was in Miss Sagert's math class. I was probably like 6th or 7th grade.
Yeah, I was a freshman in college.
She made us get a textbook out and open it because there's a picture of the Twin Towers in the textbook. She was like, turn your page such and such in the textbook. And we're like, why? And she was like, see those towers? And we're like, she's like, they're gone now. Okay.
Yeah.
But and you don't understand that.
Taylor would have been in diapers then, probably then, whenever that happened. Yeah, that's...
She'd have been learning her ABCs.
Kindergarten, yeah. But as a college freshman, like I was in class... I got out of class. I was supposed to go to a meeting. The meeting was canceled because the world was ending.
Yeah.
It was a very like surreal sort of day. I wandered over to like one of the big areas on campus, and there was like, it was as the second plane came in and hit the tower. Like I watched that live and I'm like,
yeah,
felt like I was watching a movie. So like I would go for sure, just because it's like such a formative part of like my understanding of the world, to be like, just to kind of,
it's hard to imagine an event that will have that type of magnitude again.
I don't want to.
It would be like, you don't, you obviously don't want it, but like, what would it take?
Second coming of Jesus Christ.
Pert near.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the world is different. People are different. It would take something of even greater magnitude to elicit that type of response. But like, I don't think Gen Z gets it.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can get it.
Yeah, it was just, it was real, it was just surreal. I mean, I remember it kind of walking around in a daze. I was supposed to go, it was like my sister-in-law's birthday. I wasn't married yet, but I wasn't even engaged. I was about to be engaged. But it was the lady who is now my sister-in-law's birthday.
Yeah.
We went to like Ruth Chris Steakhouse that night. It was just like us in that whole place. Like it was a very like.
Yeah, because everybody that belongs in Ruth's Chris knew somebody in the towers.
Yeah. It was
got to be important to go there.
Yeah, it was just weird. I was supposed to go to a baseball game that night. The year Barry Bonds was running down. Babe Ruth and Roger.
Did they play?
No, they canceled the game.
Yeah,
it's like the whole world was like trying to figure out what's next because we didn't know what was coming after that.
I remember like when New Year's of 2000 was like that, just sitting at home, seeing Y2K is going to happen, you know? And after that, I remember just like sitting at home, just like watching TV for a long time because you're just taking it all in. You don't know what to think. Yeah. Wonder what's going to happen next.
So, yeah. So they're up there doing that. They did that today, Statue of Liberty. I guess tomorrow's Broadway. Shopping in between and seeing all the
Did they tell you what they're going to see on Broadway? Hamilton?
No, Hamilton's not on. I don't think it is.
You don't. That's okay.
I'd be lying. I'm okay. My wife is infinitely more interested in Broadway than I am.
I am infinitely more interested in Broadway than my wife.
Okay. So, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, my wife, well, that's her job too, is theater stuff. Yeah. So, but she really loves it. So, there's shows that I've, at least one of them is a show I've never heard of. The other one, I think, is something I've heard of, but it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. When Danielle comes back, she can give us an update on that and score those out.
Get the rundown.
But I don't think it's anything she's seen before. Maybe she is going to Hamilton one of those days. I don't know. Whatever. So, so that's kind of what's going on in and around my world. You want to do a little bit of a look at the sermon Sunday. So if you were in church Sunday, I preached 1 Samuel chapter 28, which is Saul going to the witch at Endor.
Mm-hmm.
And I said in the beginning of the sermon, like, this is possibly the strangest, weirdest passage in the Bible for me. It just
top three, this one, or maybe next to this would be like the Moses, like, foreskin toss.
A bridegroom of blood.
Buzzer beater. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one's weird too. But this one definitely.
So yeah. So you said you wanted to run through some of that stuff. So let's.
I just think like you did a tremendous job.
Right.
you did a great job. Well, like I have a super realist, like I don't take any of the supernatural aspect of the story for granted. Like, I don't think that the witch really was like a snake oil salesman. Like, I think she probably was accustomed to dealing with like dark forces or whatever, you know, demonic entities, whatever.
So when people would go visit her and say, hey, yeah, I'd like to see my father.
Yeah.
That she would bring up the father that was in question?
No, no. She would bring up something that purported to be the father.
Or, so like a demon.
Yeah.
Would be the definitional there.
Yeah. And I think that God like spliced in Samuel instead. It's like, nope, demon, you back down. Samuel's coming up.
So you wanted, to the plate. Why don't you have a moment with Samuel?
Yeah. Here's what you wanted. Here's what he wanted. He's not going to get, you know.
And that makes sense because the witch was terrified.
Out. Yeah, she was terrified.
Like when she saw him, she was terrified. Like, whoa, this isn't right.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't what I'm used to seeing.
Yeah. I think when she realized that, like, this is actually Samuel and it's not whatever I'm accustomed to seeing, that surprised her.
Yeah.
That's kind of my take. I think that one of the, like, greatest tools or greatest ploys of, you know, evil in Western societies is just like hiding. I think a lot of other cultures don't take supernatural stuff for granted. Like they're,
sensitive to it.
They're sensitive to it. They're accustomed to it. Like they believe in it. And our postmodern, like we think we're better than everybody else. Like we lean so heavily on science and everything that the best thing the devil can do in America in 2026 is just not show himself that way. You got more people going to hell because they refuse to believe in God over scientific
anything
wobbles.
Spiritual.
Yeah. Just remove all semblance of spirituality from their life, good or bad, doesn't matter. You're going to same place.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think largely in the West, specifically in America, there's like Satan is perfectly happy for us to be ignorant of any spiritual realities.
Yeah.
Except for those pockets where you have churches, obviously, which recognize spiritual reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this people who are led into like New Age
paganism. Mysticism. Yeah. Yep.
The New Age paganism, the, you know, what I termed as the occult for my message. The idea is like there's
totally is
a whole lot of things out there that are inside of the realm of the occult.
Yeah.
And I said it Sunday and I mean it. Like, and it targets women specifically. I don't know a lot of men. I'm sure they exist. Men that are led into, they're more led into like Viking paganism, honestly. But
yeah,
like,
or psychedelic mess.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I'm going to go
just, I'm going to go do mushrooms, ayahuasca, and they'll totally sign up for that spiritual experience and believe it afterward. There's this guy that does outreach and like he talks to people who are heavy into the drug community because he was like one of these psychonaut, they call them. People that would just take heroic doses of DMT or something and then like commune with this stuff. And then he became a Christian. Like he had an experience, became a Christian, and he's totally out of that now. But he talks to people who still do that. And because he believes them, right? They'll be like, this thing was talking to me. He's like, I totally believe you. He's like, it was real.
I've seen that.
Yeah. He's like, it's not good. And he'll explain to them why, you know, it's not good. That, and it's pretty interesting and eye-opening. But that's the only... Those are the only forms of spiritualism that we'll be put up with in today's modern secular society is either psychedelic nonsense or exploration, whatever you want to call it, or new age.
And most of that stuff is still fringy,
mm-hmm.
right? It hits a fringe of the ladies or hits a fringe of the men.
Yeah.
But the bulk, the, you know, inside of the mass of the bell curve.
Yeah.
Satan's like, devoid. Clearly not, like, just happened to come into existence. You're mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what you believe.
Try to do some good, to leave some good in the world behind you, and you're fine. Like, you're not going to be here. You'll become one with the universe after you die. Your molecules will be, you know, used to
worry about it.
Yeah. So, yeah, but it is to be mindful as believers, because Christians are more likely, since we're sensitive to spiritual matters, it's easier for us to be drawn into a desire to hear, want to know more. How can I know more?
Game the system.
Yeah, I want a shortcut, my knowledge of God, and, you know, my guru, life coach, palm reader, tarot card person says this.
Yep.
And look, it happened, which should terrify you if it happens, but it happened. So obviously they're tapped into truth.
Mm-hmm.
What you don't know is that the tapping in that they have is just something evil. So be mindful of that. It's out there.
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to share my take on that, because
I don't disagree.
It's a more common
you.
Take nowadays. I feel like people are opening up to that, but like for the longest time, that's not the explanation that I would get. It was either complete avoidance of the passage, or it was it's all just like she didn't actually do anything, and all that hand waving.
Yeah, well, and it's like I said, I don't think. The way I understand death to work is like when you die, there's a destination for for your soul. I say it the way I understand, the way the Bible presents the eternity of the soul is there's a destination for the soul at death. But no matter what destination you're in, whether you're in heaven or you're in hell, like
you're not coming back.
You're held there in the power of God.
Yeah.
Like you're held in heaven by the power of God. You're held in hell by the power of God. And you're not able to escape for jaunts around the block to experience, you know, ghost-like behavior and floating around and knocking on doors. Like if you hear doors being knocked in your house and you think that there's a spiritual thing going on inside of there, there may be, but it's more on the demonic.
Not your grandma.
Yeah, it's much more on the demonic than it is the previous owner of the home is back to bother.
Yep.
So that's that.
Fun stuff.
So, we always kind of struggle to come up with something we want to talk about that we think will be interesting and insightful and enlightening as we're trying to push people to walk with the Lord and walk with Him well.
I think you picked a good topic.
I think I did too, Zach. Thank you. So we're going to take a couple weeks, I don't know, probably 2 or 3 weeks, and walk through the fruit of the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit are in Galatians. I'm trying to find Galatians in my Bible while looking over a microphone here. There we go. Galatians chapter 5. I'm going to read kind of the context for it, and then I'll read the whole fruit of the Spirit. And then we're just going to cover the first three of the elements of the fruit of the Spirit. And what we're going to try to focus on, Zach, is what are they, kind of define them, how they are, and how what does it look like? Yeah, how are you going to see this? How do you know that you're walking in the Spirit? You know, how can you see that? Because that's one of the fruit of the Spirit is an evidence of your salvation. It's one way you see your salvation made evident. So I'll start in verse 18. It says, "But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. Now the works of the flesh are evident: sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissensions, divisions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and things like these. I warn you, as I warned you before, that those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law, and those who belong to Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires." All right, so the idea is that there's kind of like works of the flesh, which they list out there, of which those lead to destruction. And then there's fruit of the Spirit, right, that lead to some sense of life. Against such thing, there is no law. Christ died so that our passions could be put to death, so that we could live in the fruit of the Spirit. So the first one there is the cardinal Christian virtue of love.
Yeah.
So what is love?
Baby, don't hurt me. No more.
I kind of felt like that's where you were going to go. Yeah.
Love is, man, isn't there a passage that explains what love is?
1 Corinthians 13 has a fairly detailed description of love. Love is patient, love is kind, does not envy, does not boast.
I mean, love is, I want to say in a general term, desiring what is best for another person or for someone else. And by that, I mean, ultimately, the best thing for you is to be in relationship with God and to know Christ as your Savior. Like, that's, so you'll want that for people. And then you'll want to help them when they need it. You'll want to help them avoid pitfalls or the behaviors listed just prior to this. All those things. So that's, love is not exactly what our society says it is, which is just tell people they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, so people really, I mean, we love love. If you go back into the, you know, the 60s, right? The beatniks, hippies.
Yeah.
You know, love is you know, what this world needs now is love, sweet love. The whole idea is like this virtue of love will somehow magically solve all the problems in the world. And the truth is, like, love, rightly ordered love, does a whole lot of things that these people are hoping it would do. Rightly ordered love brings harmony to relationships. It brings reconciliation to warring parties. And I like the way you said it. Love is seeking the best for someone else. And that someone else is really, it's an object. There has to be some object that the love is pointed towards. So typically it's going to be another person, or the object is God, where I'm going to love God, or the object is yourself, where you point it back at you and you say, hey, I'm going to love this guy. That's me.
Well, and loving God is such a primary target that in doing that, you'll often do things that would express love towards other people, even if you didn't mean to.
Yeah. I mean, and as Christians, love should not be difficult for us to be displaying to one another or to the Lord, right? Jesus says they'll know you're my disciples by the way in which you love one another. How does the outside world view how you treat one another? If you're always bickering and infighting and you're acting sinfully towards one another, like how does that demonstrate love? Like, it doesn't.
I think I've mentioned this before, but like, you know, our first episode was, what does it mean to be a church? And then I mentioned this in a later episode, but like, I think it's really important how we treat each other. And like, I don't want to say preferential treatment, but we need to, as much as we're worried about taking care of people outside of these walls, we need to be at least equally concerned with taking care of people inside these walls.
Yeah. And
that's not to say be exclusionary of everybody else, but.
Yeah, I might go a step further. I think, like, as a believer, I have a familial relationship to you, to care for you in the needs of the Roland family. And while I am called to love my enemy, and I am called to love the stranger and the sojourner among us, like, there's concentric circles for me that I'm responsible outward to love. And so, like, my relationship with my Lord, right? I'm supposed to love him first and foremost, love the Lord God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then I'm supposed to love, like, that next circle, which is those near people to me. And that's people of my family and people who are inside of the family of faith with me. Mm-hmm. And then out from there, like, there's others who warrant that love as well. So I do think it, like, we have a special responsibility to one another. I think that I have responsibility to everybody in the church, and I have a responsibility to, you know, the whole world. But
yeah,
I had to choose between, you know, I got $20 and Zach has a need, and John Doe from somewhere else has a need. It's a 0 second thought for me that I'm going to help the person who God has placed into my closer circle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what love isn't, though, is...
So you got that 20?
No. I don't have any just money,
kidding.
But...
just kidding.
Got some receipts. You know, the what love isn't is kind of what you said as well, that it's not just doing, telling people everything they're doing is okay.
Yeah.
You know, part of love is going to be honest with, you know, love is patient, kind, it doesn't envy, it doesn't boast, but it rejoices in the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so if, you know, if you're behaving sinfully and I notice that, mm-hmm. it's unloving for me not to come to you and say, yeah. hey, man, like, you got to work on that. I don't know if I mentioned it Sunday, but I went, maybe a small group, my middle daughter, who's 18 now. That's a fun age, by the way, because they're adults.
Ostensibly.
But they're still living at my house and eating my food. Yeah. And so I'm always aware of this. And she didn't put that out, like that attitude of like, I'm an adult, because she knows not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But she wasn't minding like her mother in like a half second moment. And I just heard it. And I was like, you are not going to, you're going to stop this right now. And I got on her like real good. And then she's just looking at me like, okay. And I was like, and if you don't like that, you don't have to be here. You're 18. You can move out. You can get on the road. And like, I went through all of that and I was not kind at all.
You're on a tear.
And so then I walk away because I was mad. And Danielle comes to me. She's like, hey, Matt. And I was like, yeah. She's like, yeah, that wasn't okay. And I'm still upset. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, she did this wrong and this wrong and this wrong. What do you mean it's not okay? And she's like, you can't. Like, she didn't do any of, like, the things that led to your further rant. Wasn't there. And I thought, I don't know. And so I had to sit with it for a couple seconds. But, like, love compelled my wife to come tell me you're wrong. And then love compelled me to go to my daughter 20 minutes later and be like, so I might have said some things that were not kind
some
or necessary.
Some people have been saying that maybe.
And I owned it because I was wrong. Like she was in the wrong, and then I jumped further over into the wrong for her.
That's my MO.
So,
that's what I do best. So
I had to go apologize. But it was when my wife told me, hey, you were wrong. I didn't like hearing it, first of all.
Yeah.
But, like, that was a loving thing for her. It was loving for her to do for my daughter. And it was loving for her to do for me. Yeah. To be like, Matt, that's not how you're supposed to parent your kid. Like, that's not, it's not appropriate. And so, you know, it's right for us at times to come and tell someone, hey, that's not okay. Like, what you're doing isn't right. And to ignore that is not loving. So, love is, it is the cardinal Christian virtue, and as a fruit of the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit is singular, by the way. Like, it's like when you have the Spirit in you.
It's all these things.
All of these things
yeah.
make up the fruit of the Spirit. It's not like, oh, I have this fruit, but I don't have so much of this.
Yeah.
It's not like a buffet where you choose, like, well, I'm going to be real loving,
my
but I'm not going to be really gentle.
My fruit of the Spirit is this.
Yeah,
yeah it's not, yeah.
Yeah, so it is, all of these things are expected to be growing in us. As we walk with the Spirit, as we grow in the Spirit, as we put to death the flesh. And love should be growing day by day. Like, you're never going to max out your love. Someone told me one time we had several kids. I don't know if you're aware of this. We have a lot of kids in my house. And someone said, I don't know how you do that. And it's because they only had like one or something kids. I said, because like, when I think about having another kid, I can't imagine like cutting my love in half. It's a
loaf of bread.
Correct. But that's how they pictured the love that they possess. Like, you know, my husband is getting this half and my kid is getting this half. And now I've got to divide it into three pieces. And they really were confused by that. But as Christians, like, the loaf isn't like fixed. Yeah. Like, God
gives
you
don't actually have
capacity.
To quantify everything.
Yeah. God gives you the capacity to grow in love. And we should consistently be growing in love. day by day as we walk in the Spirit.
That's almost, it's kind of like a, it's kind of a childish way to look at it. Like, that's the way a kid would look at it. Like, well, you're going to have another kid, you're going to love me less. Like, no, that's not how it works.
Maybe. I just think people, everyone's different in their minds. The way they they process information is different than mine. But I was already like five kids in when they said this. And I was like, I don't think you understand. Like I don't love Seth less.
The relative difference in those fractions gets less every time you have one. So yeah.
That's the inheritance for the kid gets less, right? But yeah, so like I don't love Seth less when I had Sierra, or when I had Hannah, or when we adopted Julian and Shelley, and like that's just not the way it works. And I don't love Seth less because I've grown to love these people in my church more. Like we have the capacity to grow. That's part of the fruit of the Spirit.
Yep.
So you should love there, by the way, in Greek's agape, which sometimes people really major on being this unconditional divine love.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, it's good for us to be loving to one another. All right. So what's the second fruit of the Spirit there?
Joy.
Joy. J-O-Y down in my heart. Deep down in my heart.
Mm. I was thinking joy to the world, like Three Dog Night.
Huh? Joy to the world.
Jeremiah was.
That sounds like the same song. Yeah. You didn't do the J-O-Y down in my heart, deep down in my heart.
No.
That was how you knew.
Oh, joy, 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 joy down in my heart. Where? That one? Down in my heart.
I'm trying to see.
Down in my heart.
Did you ever have to spell it? No, that's devil doesn't like you can sit on attack.
Oh, I doesn't like vaguely you can
sit on attack.
Yeah, okay.
No, this is a different joy-based song. It's J-O-Y, down in my heart, deep down in my heart. It's I got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart. Spell it, down in my heart.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Regardless, the way you knew if you were spiritual, you were like arm motions like J-O-Y, like and you're doing your leg up with the J.
This is not striking joy.
No? This isn't doing it for you?
Have you seen the Japanese lady?
Oh, the Marie Kondo.
This one strikes joy.
Yeah. Remove all things that do not bring you joy.
Yeah. So what is joy? It's not happiness, right?
It's not directly happiness. Yeah. There, happiness is much more temporal, like in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Astros won
mm-hmm.
yesterday. That's true. And that made me happy.
Mm-hmm.
But when I woke up this morning, like my wife wasn't there on my anniversary, and the happiness from the Astros was like, oh, it's kind of faded, right? Like, it's like, and maybe, I don't know if we're playing today or not. I'm on the team. if we win again today, I'll be happy. But like joy is it's a lasting emotion of, I don't know, joy. The word, by the way, which I like here because it gave me a handle.
You got the Greek for it?
I do. I got the Greek for all three of these because it's good for me to do that sometimes. The word joy is kara, C-A-R-A. But there's another word, which is charis, which is grace. Charis means grace. And so I kind of went through like a little wormhole to figure out like how closely related are these because it's...
Sounds like they're
just
pretty close.
Just the ending is different. And one of the people who writes about this sort of stuff said that, joy is grace recognized. And I thought that's really nice. Like when you recognize that God has given you something in grace, all of a sudden like it's like that sense of like, oh my goodness, like.
Well, and there's also that sense of like it's not accomplishment, right? Because it's grace. It's mm-hmm. something you were given without deserving it, whereas pride is something.
Look at what I
feel
did.
Like you deserved, or you manifested this happiness.
Good. Yeah.
Whereas joy is, it's undeserved.
I did like that. The idea of it being grace recognized because when I think about the things in my life that bring me joy. Right, like it starts at the cross where I recognize like I was a sinner bound for hell and then Christ died for me. And that's like the root of my joy. It's like founded there. Like everything else comes out of there, but like if it wasn't for that, I don't think there would be joy in me. And then you move up from there and think about all the other things that bring me joy. And I think about, you know, my wife. Like, I didn't merit my wife. Like, I looked back at my wedding photos, and I was 19 years old, and I was an idiot for sure. And I had no meaningful job. Like, I was part-time loading trucks and part-time, like, associate slash intern work at a church while going full-time school. And there's nothing about me. When I asked my father-in-law if I could marry her, I don't know why he said yes, other than I dated her for 3 years. Yeah. Because there was no, like, I was a fine, like, I loved her, obviously. Like, I cared deeply for her. But there was nothing, I don't deserve her. It was just, like, God's unmerited favor, like a picture of God's grace to me to be like, yes. And then to sustain that from stupidity to now. And so I look at that, and that brings me joy because, like, I'm like, I didn't, like, yeah, I courted her and I dated her and I asked her out and I did all these things, but I didn't merit that lady. Like, I didn't. And I've often said, like, at 19, I was like at my peak physically, and it's all been downhill since then, right? And so I just kind of married an ascending property and cashed in my chips when I still had something to do. Same thing for my kids. Like, I don't deserve to be have kids call me dad, like to get hugs from these kids for them, like the things that, like, it's, yeah. So I did like that grace recognized concept. So what does it look like as a Christian to show joy? How is that demonstrated? Where do we see that?
I think you just, I mean, that's, I don't know. I don't be a drag to be around. Like,
you're?
Yeah, I'm worried about it. I don't want to do that right always now. In the dump. You know, there's just never, you don't want to be around them because you're like, oh man, here we go again.
And people do have like depression, mental health and stuff like that they'll walk through. And like, if you're walking in that right now, like I sympathize with that, but that's not where the Lord, like, that's not the ideal place for you to be in, is to constantly be.
Yeah, I don't struggle with it, but I've known really good people I know, or at least think of as very good Christians who struggle with it. So I'm not saying that that's the case, that if you struggle with depression, you're not a Christian or something. It's just generally speaking.
Yeah, well, I just didn't want it to go unsaid there. But
no, that's true. That's good.
Yeah, but I agree. If you're a Christian, you have reason today to have a song in your heart, whether or not you're walking around whistling or singing. But there's something in you. You have reason to express, like, man, life is good.
If you ruminate hard enough on your salvation and how little you deserve it, then you've got a reason to be joyful.
Anytime I ruminate, though, I don't know if I get joyful. I feel like that's
pontificate.
Like that's to talk about a lot, right? Ponder. Pontificate is to speak, right? Like, we're we're pontificating right now.
You can do that. You can do that too.
I think that is. Isn't that what pontificate means? I don't know.
Vacillate.
I feel like
dilate. No, I'm just.
Yeah. All right. Whatever.
Anyway.
So but it should be manifest in the heart of the believer. And if you're not seeing that in your life, if you're not walking around, the number of times, like, I love hymns because they've been in my heart forever since I was little. And so I'll just like be humming a hymn randomly, no reason. Not like I was just listening to it. It's not like we sang it on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Like, just like the tune kind of hits my head, and I'm like, I sing Trust and Obey. I don't know, 10 times a week. Like, it just comes, I don't know, about something about the tune and the words that just hit me.
Have you heard Chelsea Moon and the, they're just band.
I'm just going to say no, because I don't
know who Chelsea Moon is. They're really good, and she does like a really good, really good version of that song.
I do a great version in the Bonnie when I'm driving around.
Yeah, that's but a good one.
It's just like.
And that's a good one. That song is a stumbling block for people who hate the message of Christianity. Like, trust and obey. That sounds like such a, you know? Meanwhile, you're just like, yeah.
Because it's not really about me anyway.
What it is, yeah. You can have a problem with it.
Yeah. So, but I do think it should be in you. I'm not saying you have to be singing or whistling.
Yeah.
But when someone says, how are you doing today? Like something in you should be like,
yeah,
I'm good. Heard a lot of Christians will be like, better than I deserve.
Apart from the obvious, Miss Lincoln, how was the play? You know,
my wife has a shirt. It's a Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
And it's like a Yelp review of the Ford Theater. It said 1 star, would not recommend. So that's a, she taught history, U.S. history and theater. So she found that to be a perfect shirt for her.
That's a good one.
But yeah, you should, it should be in you. It should be obvious to people around you that you have a reason for hope.
Yeah.
And joy is that hope being, you know, coming out of you. It just overflows out of you. And the Bible says, out of the overflow of the mouth, or the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. Yep. And so your words should oftentimes demonstrate the joy that you have from the hope that you've already realized in Christ. So that should be there. Yeah, that's good. All right. That's love. That's joy. Now we got peace.
Pace.
Pace.
You explain this one.
My definition here says harmony or concord. Harmony or concord. Be in one.
Mm-hmm. In agreement. Concert.
Yeah. So I do like, I like the idea of peace as being in harmony with one another. It's not necessarily a cessation of all conflict in the world. You know, it's not saying Christians can't be involved in areas where there's conflict around us.
I would go so far as to say that if you're in peace with one side, sometimes that puts you in conflict with another side.
Well, I mean, Jesus says it, right? Right.
Yeah.
He says, I did not come to bring peace, but the sword to divide
brother
from brother and father from son and mother from daughter, right? The idea is he is the stone of offense, the stumbling block of offense. But inside of the Christian, like we're to be at peace because we're at peace with the Lord, and then we're supposed to be at peace with one another, and we're supposed to be active in making peace, like to be seeking to help make peace. And blessed are the peacemakers.
Yep. Yeah, so, I was thinking of that too.
So what is that? What would that look like to be a peacemaker?
I mean, to be an intercessor for other people who are not at peace, or, you know, you can bring an end to an argument or violence or strife, that you should seek to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. Also, like the idea when you were like intercessor, I was thinking, man, I'm tracking right with you, because one of the number one things as Christians that we're to do is to help people who are not at peace with the Lord.
Yeah,
find peace with the Lord, and so we intercede on their behalf that they might meet the great intercessor.
Yeah,
who has already paid the penalty for their sin, right? Because the reason we have peace, like with the Lord, is not because you're awesome. Because we, you and I at least, I can't speak for everyone in the world, but you're not. But we're not awesome. But like Christ made peace between God, right? The wrath of
parable. God. Parable of the servant who has his debt paid, and then he goes out and he tries to harangue money out of everybody that owes him less than he was forgiven. You know, that's us. That's pretty easy to understand, that we've been forgiven so much that if it can bring peace for us to forgive others, we should do that.
Well, is it Paul's teaching, right? When he talks about don't go to pagan courts, right? To let them decide disputes within the church. And we're really bad at that as Christians, because we really don't like
SBC.
Yeah. But I'm all about that. Like, in the his rationale for that is like, wouldn't you rather like just suffer the wrong?
Yeah,
like maybe you were wronged. Maybe you're on the wrong side of this. Maybe your brother in Christ is fully in the wrong. But like, to suffer the wrong in that moment can bring peace.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
I honestly just have a hard time hanging on to, like, if you think you've ever offended me or something so bad in my life that it makes you like not want to talk to me, like, rest assured, I've probably forgotten. Or, you know, it's just nothing's worth hanging on to like that.
I've heard it said you don't want to have long accounts. Like, as a Christian, we don't need to keep a tally mark.
Yeah.
of every time someone's wronged us. And this goes back to love, right? Love keeps no record of wrongs. And we need to be those sort of people where we make peace. It's not to say that you can't deal with issues when they come, but to make peace and to say, okay, we're now at peace.
Yeah.
Like I'm not your enemy anymore.
Yep.
My previous pastor, when speaking of like the work of the cross, it seems like God's wrath was poured out across mankind. Like that's what's happening right now is the wrath of God is being realized on mankind. And then Jesus, like all of God's wrath was poured on Jesus. Like it's been satisfied. Like God is not angry. Like right. Like the accounts have been closed. So like Christ has come, the Prince of Peace has come to make peace between God and man, and then we can go and make peace between one another. And in the church, you know, all of these fruit, I think, should be best seen inside of the body of Christ, the way in which we relate to one another. But we should be peacemakers inside of our relationships inside of the church.
Yeah.
So there shouldn't be an enemy inside of the faith, but specifically inside of like your local body where you're interacting with people. If you've got an enemy, like if you're a part of my church, you have an enemy at the church. That's not okay. Like,
yeah.
Like make strides to make peace. Make peace inside of yourself, and then go make peace with the other person. But it's not acceptable to live in anger towards people like that. So yeah, harmony and concord. Yeah, what's the word there? Irene is the word in Greek.
I guess joy being grace given that we experience. Peace, in a way, could be grace that we give.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, we've been freely forgiven.
Yeah.
So we should forgive freely. And I'm the same way. Like, I don't have long accounts. You know, if I'm upset in a moment, I'll carry it for a moment.
I just don't have a good enough memory.
Yeah, if I wanted to remember specifics. Things, I probably could, but I don't want to.
Yeah,
like I don't want anyone to be my enemy unnecessarily. Like someone may view me as an enemy.
Yeah,
but I don't want them to be my enemy.
Because I remember embarrassing things that I've done in my life perfectly well. Either they're lost or
you want to share those?
No,
embarrassing things here with the world, Zach.
No.
Okay, I was just checking because it could make for some good content.
It could.
Right, we'll clip it up. We'll get it out to everybody.
Yeah,
yeah,
thanks.
Yeah. So yeah, I like the idea of grace given, the bits of grace that we're able to give.
Grace experienced and grace shared. Yeah,
well, that's good stuff. So that's the first three fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace. All of which should be growing inside the believer, day by day. Part of that goes with the fact that we have to mortify, put to death those previous things.
Yeah,
living in active rebellion.
That, you read that the piece before, but like fruits of the or the acts. He doesn't say fruits. The act,
yeah, of works the flesh, of the flesh. Yeah,
or at odds with these things.
Yeah, and they will stifle your growth. And so, mm-hmm. if you're wondering why you're not growing necessarily in all of the areas that you may want to, it may be.
Yeah,
I don't want to. Can't diagnose from a camera and a microphone.
Yeah,
but it very well could be because you've got some sin that you're harboring in your life that's preventing you from experiencing the fruit of the Spirit and growth.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's good stuff.
Yeah, very good stuff.
Yeah. You got anything else there, Zach, you want to add?
Excited about next week.
Yeah, we'll cover love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness. Patience, kindness, gentleness, I think.
Goodness.
Goodness, patience. Kindness, goodness, gentleness.
Which goodness is going to be a tough one. Let's not talk about it now, but I'm going to have to think about what I think goodness is.
Just right here. You just look at me. You see goodness.
Tough one.
Yeah. So we'll deal with that next week. We don't have any nonsense this week.
No nonsense.
I do actually have some nonsense. We'll talk about it because I don't think I can play it.
Do tell.
Seth sent me a thing and said we should break it down on the pod.
On the pod,
and it's a
skibbity.
It purports to be, like a preacher from some church, old man, like you know, an 80-year-old type preacher from a church rapping for Jesus. I'm sure it's parody of some sort based on some of the stuff that goes on there. But he's rapping for Jesus. And, uses the N-word a lot in it.
Lord.
That's probably why it doesn't work well on the pod.
Full version?
I think it's a soft, soft at the end, but like, you know, Jesus is my, you know, sort of thing.
A white guy?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Old white guy.
Oh, man.
So just not, literally just nonsense. You know, it can make you smile a little bit, but at the same time, you're like, I hope no one thinks that's, like,
yeah.
It can't be legitimate. There's no way. That it was legit.
It was
made for parody. Like it was made specifically as a joke. I feel.
I think it's our new intro song.
That is no, no. We don't monetize. Nor do we get near enough hits to monetize this.
We don't monetize things anyway.
Pretty sure we'd get some sort of a kick off YouTube for that.
I don't even think the algorithm or the whatever scans us.
Oh, it does.
Really?
Yeah, we get like our church services, which don't get
5 views gets you,
which don't get a ton of. Well, they scan it beforehand.
Oh.
So like before you even publish it, it scans for copyright things. So like we'll get hit every Sunday with songs that we're singing with copyright strikes. They're soft strikes though. It's like, well, you sang a song, so if you monetize, this group's gonna get the nickel or penny or whatever it is from the view instead of us. We've never made a penny from YouTube, nor do I expect we ever will. So that's okay.
Remember when the internet was new and it was like, this thing's going to be awesome forever. It's just going to be like freedom of speech and you can do whatever you want. And then here we are, the fun police own everything.
I don't know. Was the internet ever really fun?
Yeah, it was.
Fun?
Oh, yeah. I was like late high school is when the internet really hit its stride for me, or like, no, in the world. Like, that was just the timing.
So what was going on late high school time on the internet for you?
Like, just like Joe Cartoon and like E-Bombs World, and they're just like goofy websites where you could
it's all on TikTok
play
now.
Games, and like now everything's monetized and over the top. I don't know. I wasn't going anywhere with that.
Sounds like you're post-capitalism, Zach. Is that what you're trying to say right now?
I'm opposed to the ultimate culmination of capitalism that we're currently living in.
Well, I don't know if this is its ultimate form, Zach.
This isn't even its final form.
this is just today's form. Wait till you see the real stuff.
I'm not being very joyful, though, so I'm just tired.
I feel joyful. I do miss you, Danielle. So that's that joy I felt was just the Lord's joy, not the fact that you're
strike joy
15 sticks. From that. Yes, she does. We did.
You can't see. We're doing the little hand gesture,
yeah.
Like
yeah. Yeah. She does strike joy. We did have one of my daughters tried on my wife's wedding dress. First time I've seen that in 24 years. That was kind of cool. So
hey, which one?
Sierra.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Sierra tried it on. So. Yeah, I was like, I haven't seen that in forever. And then, like, the train is super long. No.
Yeah.
No. At her when Sierra gets married, I assume I will cry. Process through some of those emotions. Thanks a lot for that, Zach. Now I'm thinking about that. That does not strike joy. But it will. It will. So I didn't cry when Seth got married. It's like one more off the payroll.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't cry when the boy gets married. Just the girls.
Yeah. All right. Do we know girls plural? Do we know this?
Hmm?
Do we know girls plural?
No, you have girls plural.
We're talking
about you.
I didn't know the gender of child number three.
We don't know if it's a girl or a boy. We still don't.
You believe it's a girl, though. That's your subconsciously.
No, I honestly don't know what it is. Samuel is convinced it's a boy. My 3-year-old boy knows it's a boy.
Because he needs that.
At least he thinks he knows it's a boy. Like, he will argue it with you. So if he turns out to be right, that'll be weird.
He's got about a 50-50 chance.
I know.
It feels like maybe it's like a 90-10 chance he's wrong. Because I think you know something, Zach.
I don't know.
Breaking news on the pod. That's a, you can see the video. That's a face of a guy.
Talk to Taylor. Taylor wouldn't be able to hide it if she knew.
You don't think so?
And if I knew, she would have to know.
Right.
I don't know.
I should see Taylor tomorrow.
She really, like, we committed to this thing. She really wanted to not find out. I kind of wanted to find out, but I haven't even been to the, like, appointments. Like, I've been working when she goes and has the appointments.
So the doctor has to call you privately?
Have to know.
The doctor's called you privately to tell you that you're having a daughter?
Doctor, I don't know the doctor.
I don't know why the doctor's doing that. That seems like a real confidentiality breach he's doing there. He or she, I don't know.
There's no foresight into this whatsoever.
I'm just saying you look kind of guilty right now. You look kind of guilty. You got a guilty conscience.
And I better not go play poker or anything.
No, I know.
Apparently I...
Or maybe you should, because if I'm reading y'all wrong, right? That's good.
Maybe I should, yeah.
That's good. Yep. Well, we'll find out in 4 months, I guess, is the way that works. So.
Yep.
All right, you got nothing else, I assume?
Got nothing.
Well, we've been jibber-jabbering about nonsense for the last 10 minutes, so. Yep. I got nothing else. Let me pray, and we'll be out of here.
We have space to fill.
Oh, yep.
Yeah, sorry.
Good point. All right, let me pray. Lord, I love you. Thank you for this time we had to spend together. Thank you for the fruit of the Spirit being demonstrated in our lives. Pray for continued growth for me, for Zach, for all those who are walking with you. Lord, we love you. Amen.
Amen.
Peace.